Stop! You violated the law.
It's the Full Preview Podcast. UFC 299.
Let's do this, guys. It's finally here. This is the full preview for UFC 299, and this one is kind of stacked, not gonna lie, guys. Sorry, it took me a while to get this one out, but I've been very busy, and I took a little, like, vacations last weekend, so I was a little, like, not in phase. I don't know how to say that. But yeah, I mean, I'm a little bit behind, but I know you guys are going to enjoy this one because this one is big. We have UFC 299, O'Malley versus Vera 2. So it's Sean O'Malley versus Chito, a rematch. Some people complaining that Chito is not a deserving contender, but I still find this to be a very compelling matchup. So I'm not going to complain about it. I know, like, Merab is probably, like, the rightful... Merab or Corey are the rightful contenders. And it was weird to have, like, Merab waking in as the replacement. And Corey was on the waking show earlier today, so... But, yeah, it's Chito who is getting the shot. And to his credit, Chito coming off of... not a super impressive win against Pedro Munhoz, but a solid one. And is the only guy who holds... an official win over Sean O'Malley in the UFC. So, yeah, this card has a lot of interesting fights. The co-main event that is also 5 rounds. It's very interesting. And the prelims, some of them are not, like, incredible, but they are, like, very well-matched fights. I think the main card here is very strong. There are some points that some people maybe won't like, but I'm not gonna lie. Other than watching high action fights and like high level action, I like to get answers, and I feel like we are getting a lot of answers out of these fights. So why don't we get started? The first prelim of the night, because remember, as always, we're going for the first prelim to the main event. The first prelim of the night is Joanne Wood, formerly Joanne Calderwood, against Marina Moroz in a rematch. The original fight was like many years ago. Let me check when this was. 9 years ago, these girls fought. So let's begin with Wood, Joanne Wood. I would describe as an upright kickboxer with an amateur Muay Thai background. Like actual Muay Thai, you can see a lot of actual influence there. Wood mostly fights behind the lead leg and the jab. A wide variety of kicks from the lead leg, including tips, snap kicks, and pendulum kicks. And a stiff stepping jab allowed her to set up the right hand, with which she can get extra range switching with it. She's good at ending combinations with the left hook, but also with the left body kick, catching fleeing opponents with it. The clinch is one of her best faces, being good at setting up elbows and knees from a variety of grips, and she possesses decent footwork there too. She's very vulnerable to hooks and wide shots on the feet, especially when not having the initiative, as her defensive reactions aren't great and her upright stance can expose her. The slow reactions also harm her defending takedowns and during scrambles. She can play guard, but she's usually not very good at getting back to her feet. And opposite to her, we have Marina Moroz, a lanky boxer who attacks the 1-2 varying targets. She likes to move on the outside and accumulate volume. Not a lot of head movement, but can lean back and look for a wild left hook on the counter. She's aggressive in the clinch, throwing hooks to the head and body, but can be susceptible to collar ties. She can grind out against the cage, look to drag her opponent down, and she's deceivingly strong from those positions despite her like wiry frame. She has good top control and aggressive with ground pound from top full guard, posturing up and using her long limbs to her advantage. She's a submission threat from both the bottom and top, especially the armbar from guard. It's like her specialty. Lack of variety and consistent entries to the clinch are, I would say, the biggest flaws for her. This is a rematch and probably Woods retirement fight. She already announced that she's going to retire after this fight. Giorgio's kicks can give her an advantage in long range, as Moroz is accustomed to establishing range with her long jab. And Wood can punish her to the body with her longer tip and kick her legs as well. The problem for Giorgio here is that just like in their first fight, Marina straight shots can get to her when she gets aggressive, and if she Giorgio finds herself in a grappling disadvantage. I feel like Moroz is going to win this one again via submission, this time on the second round. And with that, we'd move to a men's flyweight bout. That fight was flyweight, by the way. We have CJ Vergara against Asu Almabayev. So Vergara is a cardio machine. He likes to pile up volume at range with good leg kicks, body kicks from both stances. He has a good check hook that allows him to counter well, and decent combination punching is his main tool when he's pressuring. Defense can be lacking both when moving forwards and when he's being backed up, but he can hold his own moving his head and keeping his hand up inside the pocket. So he's like, his defense is at his best when he's at neutral space. He can get carried away pushing forwards, and also when he's getting pushed back himself. He has strong takedown defense and solid scrambling, and that helps him with pushing the pace. But he can be vulnerable when trying to get back up. Durability, toughness, and cardio are all S tier, and he takes advantage of them more as the fight progresses. One problem with Vergara is that he can accept the ranges proposed by his opponents, and it can take him a while to feel comfortable enough to push his dangerous pace. He can also be lured into low activity lapses if things don't heat up. His opponent is Almabayev, an explosive wrestler kickboxer. Almabayev doesn't have much of a boxing game, but he throws heat and has decent timing for counters. He mostly scores at open space with a variety of big kicks from both legs, and he's not afraid to spin at all. The short of his takedowns is very fast, and he's good at chain wrestling, having good changes between the double leg and the single legs, and the single and the high crush, that kind of stuff in open space. And he's good at grinding to tie his hands together against the fence for big amplitude double legs, lifts from body lock, mat returns, that kind of stuff. He's strong from top position and a decent submission threat with chokes from the back take and the front headlock. Not very effective at landing ground pound while maintaining position, he mostly chooses to control. He's a very solid defensive wrestler and great scrambler from his back. He lacks process on the feet and depends on his speed and counter openings to get his takedown game going. But his power on the feet helps him with getting to the places that he wants. Vergara sometimes needs the help of a dancing partner to get going, and I think Almabayev is exactly that. So I'm mostly expecting this one to be exciting. Both guys can be inconsistent with their output at open space, but Almabayev, will push the wrestling, and I think that will be enough to get CJ to work. CJ should have an advantage on the feet, but Asu will have a power edge. The wrestling also favors the Kazakh fighter, but CJ mat wrestling has been solid, and so has been his submission defense so far. It looks to be a close fight in which Almabayev takes over with his wrestling, but I feel like CJ Vergara starts taking over mid-second round and he takes a decision, so I'm taking the underdog here. We move all the way up to heavyweight for the next one. Robelis de Spain is fighting Josh Parisian. So de Spain is huge, a former Olympic taekwondo athlete. Very long with big power, seems to have some notions about circular footwork, and his loopy punches pack enormous power. As I already said, like, he just hits so hard, is like the main thing about him. Cardio and grappling remain a question mark, seems to at least be aware of grabbing underhooks when he's put against the cage, but he doesn't look urgent at all to fight grips, and has waited for the referee to interfere in his favor in the only fight that he was pressed there. So nothing else to say about him. On the other hand, we have Parisian. Mostly a cardio bully, I would describe. Despite his looks, Parisian has one of the most consistent outputs in the heavyweight division, and he uses that to his advantage, taking the liberty of being creative with his offense, looking to find openings. He feints jabs and leg kicks in open space, looking to draw big reactions to set up big strikes, often spinning into back fists. He can move his head decently well at open space when he has control of the initiative, but he can get sloppy when extending combinations, crashing into the clinch, into 50-50 positions, and not moving his head during entries most of the time. Despite his size and deceiving agility, he doesn't have remarkable power for the division, so he relies on making opponents tired. Parisian is like sufficiently well-rounded, can do a bit of everything, clinching, wrestling, grappling, but he can get stuck on bottom position and is at his best pouring volume on open space or getting to top position himself. He's tough and durable. Parisian's biggest flaws are his shallow defense and the lack of dynamism to turn around the fight, relying on his cardio advantage when things aren't going his way. Parisian seems like a very adequate test for the Spain in this stage of his career. He's only like 4 fights in. Parisian is durable, tough, conditioned, and all of those can be a nightmare for a guy used to run over opposition. That said, there's also a good chance that he just runs through Parisian. Because for all the okay qualities that Parisian has, his defense is nothing to write home about, and Spain is not the kind of guy that you want to be hit by. Really a flip coin, I feel this one, but I think Parisian's lack of immediate finishing threats will give the Cuban one too many opportunities to land a big shot and ending it all. So I'm picking the Spain by knockout on the first round. The next one is a middleweight bout. And it's between a former welterweight and a former former light heavyweight, so that's interesting. We have Michel Pereira against Michal Olenchejczyk. So let's begin with Pereira. An absolute meme lord. Powerful and dynamic, Pereira has some skills in every phase, but mostly relies on tricks instead of fundamentals, and his game lacks cohesion. He has a good jab and a left hook, but can't seem to use them to dictate the pace. He mostly fights on the outside, trying to move people into big shots. A solid front snap kick helps him with making his output more consistent. Strength and physicality help him defending takedowns, and he's a solid top control grappler, but he can struggle against chained attempts and defaults to style from bottom, looking for opportunities to explode to get back up. The biggest issue for Pereira is that he gasses with all his big movements, even when fighting at a pretty like medium pace. He's decent at fighting tired, but he tends to rely more on, and he also like tends to rely more on basic tools when he's tired, so that's good, but the lack of depth to his game shows in those situations. How his cardio holds up now that he moved up to middleweight remains to be seen. He just had a very short fight in his debut. Defense is also pretty unstructured. He can move his head and his feet well here and there, but he's very inconsistent with it. He has good chin and toughness, but the resolve. And his resolve has been okay, to be honest, other than that fight that he lost to that small grappler. So yeah, that's Pereira. On the other hand, we have Olenchejczyk, a southpaw pressure fighter. Michal likes to walk down his opponents behind high guard and move his head side to side, fighting hands or looking to land long jabs to line up his left hand, which he can throw wide or straight. Defense is not great, but he keeps in motion and is good at seeing shots coming, and his ability to parry kicks from his high guard is very useful to push foes to the fence. Once against the fence, he's a dangerous combination puncher, measuring with his jab and unloading with uppercuts and body shots that pile up damage very quickly. His defense also gets better when he's throwing against the fence, rolling and hiding behind his shoulder to avoid big counters. Olenchejczyk is deceptively strong defending takedowns, denying shots with wizards and underhooks, and showing heavy hips and a quick sprawl when he needs to. Though he has been vulnerable to well-timing shots when he squares his hips to throw his left hand, so watch out for that. Olenchejczyk is a serviceable grappler. He can expose his back, getting back against the fence, but if he finds himself in top position, he has brutal ground and pound, being notably good at landing hard shots inside the close guard of his opponents. Cardio and toughness are solid pros. His lack of variety and one-note approach have costed him in his losses. Despite Pereira being the former welterweight and Michal being the former light heavyweight, Pereira might have an overall size advantage here, and at the very least will have a height advantage. aided by his like longer style from his side stance. Pereira can be dangerous, especially early, and he's somewhat comfortable moving on the outside, so the chances that he catches Michal with something big aren't small. But I think Oleksiychuk's style is handmade to move the Brazilian on the outside and punish his big defensive movements, especially punish him to the body with big power. My pick is Oleksiychuk by knockout on the second round. With that, we move to light heavyweight, and we have a bout between Felipe Lins and Iwan Kutelava. So Lins is a decently athletic all-rounder. He likes to stay on the front foot on the outside, feeding, looking for spots to land big leg kicks and use a stiff jab to set up loopy big punches with both hands. Lins will change stances and manages distance fairly well at his first layer of defense. His punching form is not great, he's very loopy, but he throws with power and can put his hands together well. That aided by his distance management and footwork when he's on the offensive. He will also change levels to drive opponents against the cage and look for takedowns, be it double legs or body locks, and he's physically strong and has a solid grappling game. He has struggled in the past to achieve top control after successful takedowns against the cage though, so watch out for that. His defense is pretty shallow and he relies a lot on distance and control of the initiative. He can be caught in prolonged exchanges, and also his pressuring options are limited and has had trouble with mobile opponents who can navigate the octagon well. His wrestling and grappling defense hasn't been tested by UFC 205ers, but he has looked agile, strong, and showed a good understanding of fighting grips in his heavyweight stint against good wrestlers, particularly Jared Roschel. Being somewhat vulnerable to chain wrestling sequences, but he's a good wall walker and doesn't accept positions easily, so those are very good qualities. Opposite to him, we have Kutelava, a wrestle boxer that starts fights very hot. Kutelava is a powerful boxer who likes moving his head side to side, looking to close the distance against his often taller opponents. He packs power on both hands and can put combinations together well, but his head can become stationary during prolonged exchanges. He's decent at drawing reactions to counter, both from step backs and slips, and his side-to-side head movement and constant level changes play directly into his wrestling. Kutelava is a physically imposing but also reasonably technical wrestler who can finish takedowns in open space and against the fence. His single leg series in particular has shown to be very effective, usually finding trips from leg lifts after making opponents try to maintain balance. He also has a good reactive double leg in open space and a solid inside and outside trip changeup inside the clinch. Kutelava's penchant for mat wrestling can get him in trouble though, as he can concede bottom position holding onto ankles or find himself in front headlocks against bigger guys. He has good scrambling abilities and a good chin, but his cardio and resolve have let him down in the past. His fast starts and aggressive striking and wrestling style get him tired quite early in fights, and he has trouble turning fights around when his dynamism has faded a little bit. Kutelava always has a chance early since he's athletic, dynamic, and offers danger in multiple phases. Lin has been caught clean by big shots and has been taken down in the past, so the beginning might be dangerous for him, but I think the most replicable outcome consists on him outlasting Kutelava's early danger and putting his solid defensive wrestling and powerful striking to get a second round knockout. So we have the first of quite a few bantamweight fights. Here we have Pedro Munhoz versus Kyler Phillips. Let's begin with Munhoz. Munhoz operates effectively with a minimalist toolset on the feet, jab, low kick, front kick, looking to either pressure his opponent to the cage or counter with his big right hand or his pretty heavy left hook. His ability to use calf kicks to counter both jabs and opposing kicks allows him to compete with longer fighters at range, and his solid pressuring footwork and counterpunching abilities means he can adapt to fighters looking to outfight or close in on him. He's been hittable, especially upstairs, but a mix of fierce layer head movement, high guard, and good eyes have made him very hard to hurt throughout the years. Basically impenetrable takedown defense and an elite guillotine have made the task of taking him down a very risky proposition. He's a solid offensive wrestler too, and his BJJ can also shine from top position. His entries are clean, but he can lack setups, particularly forced to shoot from long distance. His biggest weakness has been effective feigning and jabbing that put him off of his countering game, as he lacks variety to his leg kick setups without the support of his boxing. And we're probably witnessing a diminishing in his physicality after all these years in the UFC. His opponent, Kyler Phillips, a dynamic all-rounder, Phillips has a very solid baseline skill set in every area of MMA, but it's sometimes hard to tell what he wants to do and the process behind it. It mostly looks like Phillips is at his most coherent when he's in neutral space, working behind his jab, looking to put his hands together if the other fighter stands his ground, or to kick them if they choose to back up. He has big power on his right hand and can kick off punches well. His defensive reactions tend to be big, but he offers a variety of defensive options that help him not get predictable. Phillips has been very hard to take down. He has tremendous balance and fights grips well, often turning his back to fight the hands or attack kimuras, a classic from the MMA lab. A solid offensive wrestler as well, Phillips can lack good setups in the form of striking, but his quick feet and timing can allow him to surprise with takedown attempts in open space. He's also a good scrambler who will not accept bottom position and is always looking to create movement and space. Phillips' biggest flaw is his lack of focus and nuance on the feet, often relying on big dynamic movements and tricks to land his big shots, and his shallow defense that mostly shows up during exchanges. His chin has been a good asset, but his cardio has been hit and miss. I expect this one to play out on the feet, as both guys are very good at defending takedowns and better at that than they are at taking people down. Phillips looked to have a decent length advantage here, but Munoz had dealt with that in the past just fine. I would trust Pedro's more focused approach of jab and leg kick against the more disorganized style of Phillips, but I think Pedro is lacking like a second gear and dynamism as of late, and his volume has also been a bit slower despite not looking to have worse conditioning than he used to. I think Phillips edges out a decision on the strength of higher volume and bigger moments in a very close fight. So Phillips by decision is the pick. We move to lightweight and we have an interesting one. We have Mateusz Gamrot against Rafael Dos Anjos. So Gamrot, a mobile switch stance chain wrestler that mostly favors a low single off a very quick level change. He operates on the feet on open space, looking for straight shots from both stances to combo into hooks or kicks. He can shoot reactively if pressured, but also looks to just time the takedown out in open space. Despite the speed of his level change, the entries can be a bit messy, shooting from way outside or dropping to his knees. He still completes a lot of takedowns thanks to good ankle control that allows him to lift, climb up the leg, or transition to the other leg to finish double legs. Once on the ground, he's not great at controlling, but he's very tenacious with pursuing mat returns and can find good positions during transitions, usually finding back body locks or deep singles when fighters are working their way back to their feet. He has a variety of submissions that he usually finds during transitions, including back chokes, leg locks, and arm attacks. He likes to reset often both in wrestling and striking, and he's a bit shaky on the feet. Sometimes not seeing counters or getting countered kicking, throwing kicks naked. His defense on the feet can be lacking, but his ability to level change when things get rough offer him a huge safety blanket. Shin and cardio are great assets, his lack of damage during scrambles and shallow process on the feet are his biggest flaws. On the other hand, we have RDA, the former champion, Rafael Dos Anjos. A southpaw, the former champion is at his best when he gets to pressure, but nowadays he has a more calculated approach and doesn't push opponents to the cage as insistently as he once did. Dos Anjos is crafty, but he's all about initiative, fighting behind medium speed straight shots that he uses to probe, keep the opponent busy and gather reactions. From there he starts setting up bigger shots, including a brutal left kick to the body and head, a quick and heavy outside leg kick, a sneaky lead uppercut, and a winding left hand. Dos Anjos' defense is at his best when he's on the front foot, having good eyes to see shots coming and mixing a variety of high guards and shoulder blocks to keep himself safe. Also being good at parrying kicks, always useful for a pressure. Dos Anjos is very strong in the clinch with knees and elbows. His transition game between faces is a strong point. He mixes his takedowns with his strikes very well, often manipulating his opponent's posture with shots or drawing counters to time level changes. And he's a solid chain wrestler from open space, and also against the cage. The biggest flaws for RDA show up when he's put on the back foot, as he has a hard time predicting shots and using the appropriate defensive measure, and his head movement can be one note as well. His takedown defense has been more than solid, but he has had trouble with dedicated chain wrestlers against the cage and has been particularly vulnerable to body lock attacks. Despite RDA's history against strong wrestlers, I feel like he matches up pretty well against Gandro's style, as RDA has been solid defending leg attacks and is also a solid scrambler that fights grips well, getting back up, and Gandro is not terribly controlling once on the ground, and his clinch game has been denied in the past as well. That said, RDA is almost 40 years old, and no one is immune to the years, the wear and tear as well. Gamrot, even in fights when he's denied the takedowns and gets tired, he's still capable of pushing a tremendous pace. RDA's job here will be to replicate in some capacity what his former teammate Benil Dariush did to beat the Polish wrestler, and he has some advantages to do so in the form of cleaner punching mechanics and kicking mechanics than Dariush, and also like just being a more natural, dynamic athlete. But Dariush, to his credit, show up some very like up-to-date BJJ scrambling and a very focused takedown defense-oriented game plan. And those are things that an old RDA haven't showed as of late. I think it is a winnable fight for RDA, for sure, but I think Gamrot takes a close decision with output and an unrelentless wrestling attack. So I'm picking Gamrot by decision. With that, we move to a flyweight bout between Caitlin Cerminara, formerly Shukagian for those unfamiliar, and she's fighting Maisie Barber. So, Cerminara or Shukagian, she's a mobile output kickboxer, very long for the division. She maximizes her length, fighting behind straight shots and linear kicks. The one trick is her bread and butter. She's disciplined about exiting in angles and grabbing proactive clinches for defense, but the head movement is inconsistent, especially during exchanges. She does a good job of attacking all three levels consistently, but her rhythm can become predictable. Takedown defense and overall grappling have looked very strong. He will take clinch takedowns if they are present, and fighters have failed to do much with opposition against her, other than Valentina in her fight. Her lack of second gear and reliance on output to take over fight have been her weakness, but she's tough, durable, conditioned, and well-rounded to make up for it. On the other hand, we have Barber, a natural athlete. The southpaw Barber is finally putting together a game that makes sense, kinda. She's still raw at distance. Barber mostly relies on big single shots, particularly her big left kicks. And she will try to counter with the right hook and the left hand when opponents close the distance. Distance and clinches are her main layers of defense, and her head doesn't move at all during exchanges. Some fighters are inconsistent with her movement. For Barber, it does not exist when she gets into the pocket. She doesn't take full advantage of it, but as an MMA native, she's naturally good at landing strikes during transitions, and this makes the clinch and ground and pound her most dangerous tools. Her offensive wrestling is nothing to write home about, but her scrambling has become very good under Team Alpha Male. Her lack of nuanced defense, process at long range, and mechanisms to take advantage of her transition game are her biggest weaknesses. This is an interesting fight because Cerminara has had trouble with this type of imposing athletes, but at the same time she has the outside striking style to frustrate Barber, where she's still at her least structured. Cerminara, being a solid defensive wrestler and BJJ player, will probably mean that Barber will have to rely on big moments to either get the finish or win rounds. It is possible since Caitlin, Shukagian, Cerminara, whatever, is 35 and has been fighting professionally for almost 10 years. A decay is to be expected, but hasn't really been there so far. Barber can win this, especially if she finds a big shot from long range or nails Caitlin in the clinch, but I think I still gotta go with the consistency of Cerminara to win a decision at this moment. And with that, we are on the last fight of the prelims. We are back at heavyweight. We have a fight between Curtis Blaydes and Jailton Almeida. So let's begin with Blaydes. a wrestler, Blaze has been trying to build a consistent game to ironically inconsistent results. A bigger hitter that he gets credit for, Blade's striking has been hit and miss. He clearly has good understanding of footwork, head movement, and rhythm play, but the confidence he puts into applying those concepts vary from opponent to opponent. At his best, Blade stays athletic, potshotting with decent power, and proactively moving away from shots, using the threat of the takedown to set up strikes and vice versa. And at his worst, Blaze can be shaky and sloppy and can present big moments of poor defense or predictability for his opponents to exploit. His wrestling is obviously his A game, but he has gotten more picky late into his career when it comes to shooting takedowns, waiting for opportunities to get clean on his opponent's hips. I don't know if that's his concern with his gas tank or he feels more confident about his striking. A good chained wrestler who can attack the legs and from the clinch, Blaze shines when he can get his foe flat on his back away from the cage, where he can put his big round and pound and wrist rights to good use. While cardio is above average for the heavyweight division and he pushes even when his fatigue starts to show, his effectiveness can be diminished late into fights. His opponent, Jairton Almeida, while a bit undersized for the division, the Brazilian is a tremendous athlete who specializes in grappling. Not very resourceful at open space, he likes to pressure opponents to the cage with linear strikes, a lot of the times using a front kick to stand his adversaries up before shooting to the legs with great speed. Not a very nuanced wrestler, Almeida does have an efficient shot given the right entry, and he's sure to finish his double leg against the cage if he connects the hands, even against larger opponents. Once on the ground, he's very good at flowing from position to position, mixing traditional BJJ with leg and wrist rights, and has shown resourcefulness the few times he has been reversed, being able to sweep and wrestle up. His specialty is finding the back, giving opponents openings to turtle, or while they try to wall walk, and he's a good rear naked choke finisher. His ground and pound can leave a lot to be desired, especially for someone as athletic as he is, and he has failed to deliver simultaneous damage and control to big opponents who can stay calm on their backs. Cardio and chin seem to be very good so far. Blaze here will have a sizable size advantage and will be the best wrestler Jailton has faced yet, other than Almeida landing something big on the feet or Blaze just making a big mistake and exposing his back. It is hard to see a reliable path to victory for the Brazilian, as it is hard to imagine that Blaze will be as easy to wrestle as other past opponents. Jailton will probably have a speed edge on the feet and there will be some openings, even with his raw striking, to make something happen and to take advantage of this situation from there. But the pick has to be Blaze by knockout on the second round. His high guard, fighting hands, and gathering reaction with feints, straight shots, and kicks. He will switch stances and he's comfortable fighting open and close matchups from both orthodox and southpaw. At long range, he favors his jab, heavy low kicks, quick snap kicks to the body, and both straight and loopy rear hands that he throws with speed. He's good at managing distance, but as he gains confidence, he will rely more on parrying, hiding behind his shoulders, and the high guard, and also head movement to stand his ground and counter from the inside. Jan possesses big power and timing to his counters, but he can tend to throw a bit too wide for my liking, and it's better when he's putting compact combinations together instead of looking for singular big shots. Tracking fleeing opponents with long punches and kicks to the body and legs is also a specialty of his. He's not afraid to mix in the wrestling. Jan is solid driving people to the cage with his shots and can chain attempts fairly well. Be it against the fence or on the ground, Jan will be more concerned with landing big shots during transitions more than with controlling and eating the clock. He can have trouble controlling opponents when unloading, but he has nasty ground and pound. As with many other pressure fighters, Jan has trouble with his defense when he loses grip of the initiative, as his retreats and parries can be punished when moving back. He also can get single-minded despite his versatility, and that means that he can be surprised during transitions, as he can get focused on striking or wrestling too much during singular exchanges, missing the objectives that give him the best chance to win. His opponent, the Chinese Song Yadong, I would describe as a tactics-first kickboxer. Yadong is comfortable at neutral space or walking people down. He's either looking to land single shot at open space or looking to get into exchanges to put his speed and power to good use. Heavy leg kicks and a stiff jab are his main scorers at range, but he uses them both to push opponent back or force them to exchange more than to set up any further offense. When it comes to setups, Yadong likes to use immediate setups, using the different strikes of a singular combination to set up the follow-up shots, and he seems to think exchange to exchange more than pushing any particular game. This doesn't mean that Song has no process, as he will look for the directionality that he feels gives him the best shot at winning the fight, and his physical attributes paired with his technical ability means he will win most exchanges that happen under his terms. Song Yadong, on top of that, has solid footwork that helps him with selecting exchanges, and his defense once in the pocket is solid, moving his head with his punches and taking angles well with his feet. A tremendous athlete, Song has put his attributes to good use when it comes to clinching and wrestling, and his solid footwork has made it hard to opponents to get clean on his hips, and even when they get to his hips are very heavy, and he will make good use of wizards and underhooks to deny wrestling attempts. He has shown a good eye for reactive takedowns himself mid-exchange, and he has solid top control. His wrestling starts to show holes when he's forced to defend for long exchange against defense, and despite being a very good scrambler, resources can be lacking when he's put flat on his back and he's denied the ability to roll with initial momentum. Chin and cardio have been outstanding so far. His biggest problem has come in the lack of awareness when it comes to cagecraft, and lack of tools to employ his attributes when the opponent doesn't fall in his usual traps. While both fighters here tend to be like tacticians, Yan is the more focused in the process of pressuring, and that can come in handy in this fight. Song will probably have more power out of the gate and sharper mechanics to his punches, but he will have to deal with Yan's pressure and layers of offense. Yan doesn't have the length of Sanhagen to take advantage during clinch and grappling exchanges, but he does have the depth of skill to maybe trouble Yadong if he gets good shots against the cage. Song needs big moments early to take the momentum away from Yan and denying the ability to like snowball. And especially considering that Yan is coming off like three fight losing streak, so maybe the confidence is not there. Yadong comes with the momentum, but I feel like Yan will remind us all why he was so highly regarded in the first place. I think Pure Yan wins a decision here. The next bout is a welterweight fight between Gilbert Burns and Jack Della Maddalena. So Burns, the former BJJ ace, is now a well-rounded and crafty MMA veteran, constantly fading on the outside, especially with level changes. Burns likes to fight behind a jab and leg kicks, looking to set up the overhand right or his sweeping left hook, or also to time a cross counter of the opposing jab or change levels into takedowns. Burns have big power, good durability and decent cardio. All of those attributes make the former lightweight a physical presence at welterweight, even against bigger opponents. He's also physically strong in the clinch. He can transition to strike or look to get the fight to the mat with body lock takedowns, trips, or dropping to the legs against the cage. A brilliant scrambler from the bottom, he will generate space and give no openings for mat returns, mixing technical grappling and explosiveness. On the other hand, from top position, he's smothering. Burns has a variety of submissions that are aided by his strength, grip, and squeeze. Especially dangerous is his mount game, as he can finish arm triangles, take the back for the rear naked choke, or finish armbars from top mount or the back take. Burns' lack of variety at long range and good entries for his takedowns can leave him stuck at open space where opponents have been able to exploit his limited defensive options. Jack Della is a brutal combination puncher. He often switches stances, but is primarily a southpaw. Though he likes to mirror his opponent's stance, he likes the close stance matchup. Jack Della has clubbing power. He likes to close the distance behind his jab and heavy calf kicks to let go with long combinations, especially when he gets his opponents against the cage, damaging to the body with hooks from both sides. And also he's pretty good at hot steps counters moving back. So So that's something to watch out for if Burns gets aggressive. JDM can get carried away with exchanges with his head on the center line, but he has good footwork and he's hard to hit when he's fleeing the pocket. He's also a good scrambler. JDM can be surprised with takedowns when moving forwards. Tends to get into very precarious positions often, but he stays composed defending submission attempts. The thing with Madalena is that he's sharp out of the gate, fights at a high pace, and he can sustain that high pace for 3 rounds, no problem. Decision making can be a problem, and he has exposed himself to takedowns and counters being reckless, but he did a good job of fighting a disciplined game plan on his last fight. This is one of the few fights where I feel like Burns really needs the takedown, or at the very least establish like a credible takedown threat to win this fight. Jack Della cannot fight reckless like he did against Hafez, and while the matchup is very different in this one, some elements of the approach that he has against Kevin Holland that we will be talking about in a moment, are very applicable here. Burns has power and has the tools to take advantage of someone with the scrambling style of JDM, but I think he's going to get stuck at long range, losing the jab leg kick battle against the Australian. And if he tries to like get aggressive on the inside, I think Burns is in trouble. I'm picking Jack Della Maddalena to win by knockout on the second round. And we stay at welterweight. We have a fight between the aforementioned Kevin Holland, and he's fighting a debuting Michael Page MVP. So let's begin with Holland. An annoyingly long striker from distance, Holland establishes range behind a variety of kicks and straight punches. Despite his long frame and long range tools, he's not shy about closing the distance, and he can be vulnerable when he closes the distance because he doesn't really move his head when doing that. He puts long combinations together in the pocket and has surprisingly okay defenses there. Moving his head and guarding with his forearms and shoulders, being strangely harder to hit inside the pocket than when he's trying to push forwards. Talking about moving forwards, when he does so, he ends up in the clinch a lot, as he usually tends to break stance when trying to put combinations together. That's not entirely bad though, as he's good at framing and finding strikes in the clinch and during breaks, possessing nasty elbows, knees and loopy punches that are complemented by his super long frame. He's also good at using his length to defend takedowns, especially with the Wizard, but he can be taken down by good entries in open space. Holland is a constant scrambler and very annoying to deal with from the bottom, but he can be controllable if put flat on his back. Other than that, Holland is like super well conditioned, very tough, has a great chin. His opponent, Michael Menon Page, a freestyle karateka, equally as long as Holland, he fights from a completely side-on southpaw stance, looking to either blitz or counter. He's constantly feinting with stutter steps, his lead hand and lead leg looking for openings, and his stance, length and speed afford him valuable extra time when closing the distance with his 1-2s. While his stance can expose him when he's trying to circle, he's always conscious about taking angles after attacking. The long distance he establishes also means he's harder to leg kick than what his stance might suggest. But if opponents happen to find the range for leg kicks, they can be very effective against someone with his lead leg completely turned on. His leg dexterity allows him to attack from range with a variety of kicks and spins with speed and power. But most of his consistent output comes from his hands, particularly the rear left. His blitzing style has posed him to takedowns in the past, but his long distance and use of levers have proved him hard to take down proactively in open space. Once on the bottom, MVP is mostly a staller, closing guard and using his big hands to weirdly effective wrist control to minimize any kind of damage, only looking to get up or create a scramble when the opponents create space. This one is very hard to read. Thankfully, Holland's fight with Wonderboy would give us a little bit of insight on how he might approach another karate stylist. There are a few X factors though. Holland was longer than Wonderboy, something that he usually has and has used to his advantage and used to his advantage on that fight. But also on the flip side, he broke his right hand. So what can we take from that fight? MVP being billed as the same height as Holland and with his side-on stance, he might be the one guy in the whole division that feels longer than Holland inside the cage. Still, Holland had some good ideas of aggressively closing the distance and finding clinches. Page might be harder at this point to grab a hold on than Wonder Boy, but there's no evidence to suggest that he's as strong as Wonder Boy inside the clinch. Also, Wonder Boy has more consistent output with his kicks, and I feel he's more damaging with his kicks. MVP has a more like sniping style with his kicks. They're not as heavy. So it will be interesting to see like what happens in this one. It's really anyone's fight, and I feel like these guys are closely matched. I'm taking a gamble and I'm picking Holland to win like a tepid decision that could go either way. That's my pick. And with that, we move to the co-main already. It's a lightweight bout, 5 rounds, a special event. We have Dustin the Demon Poirier against Benoit Saint Denis, the God of War. So Poirier, a southpaw boxer, Poirier is one of the best combination punchers in the sport with great variety and ambidexterity. But he's also a slick operator in open space with a solid jab and clean footwork that allow him to pick his spots. Poirier is known for his shifting entries. He will track down fleeing opponents with chips, punctuating his extended range with leg kicks or long right hands. He employs a number of guards, but is perhaps better known for his stonewall, employing a high elbow on his lead side and a high guard on the rear side, being able to block and shoulder roll a number of shots, and also employ good head movement from there. The stonewall does limit his countering options, and he can be a bigger counter threat when he's like hiding behind a regular guard or a more traditional shoulder roll that he also does from time to time. Poirier is also good at parrying kicks from his high guard, and he's a punishing kicker himself with his left leg going to the body on open stances with both roundhouses and front kicks, and to the calf in close stance matchups. He also employs the inside leg kick well to disrupt the timing of fellow southpaws. Takedown defense has been a concern late into his career. While he does a good job of angling and fighting hands to deny shots in open space, his sprawling ability has been lacking late into his career, and this is probably related to all the hip injuries that he has had. From the bottom, Dustin is a resourceful BJJ grappler and is very good at wall walking, but he can expose his back in the process. Dustin is himself a pretty potent offensive wrestler. There's not a lot of nuance to his wrestling, but he can time level changes well, and his strength allows him to grind takedowns attempts against the cage, and he can finish his solid double leg there. Dangerous from top position, Dustin is good at controlling, scrambling, and landing big ground and pound from several positions and during transitions. Other than his takedown defense, his decision making during grappling exchanges has also been worrying from time to time, not fighting to the best of his abilities, I feel. Dustin gas tank and resolve remain huge assets even late into his career. And his opponent Saint Denis, a large and aggressive southpaw with a big left kick, he will move forwards probing with his right hand to set up kicks on all three levels or a solid straight left. Check right hook gives him a bit of protection against opponents looking to close the distance, and once he connects, he will blitz alternating both hands without head movement or much finesse at all, but with considerable power. He will look to punish retreats with wide hooks and long kicks to the body and head. Once he gets his opponents against the cage, he has a good transition from the straight left into the double leg, and he's a decent chain wrestler with big physical strength. If the initial shot doesn't succeed, he's content to work the back, where he prefers working back takes with the seatbelt instead of mat returns from the waist cinch. He's pretty good at wearing on guys, be it with the pace of his striking or during grueling clinch and wrestling exchanges. And he uses his size to his advantage in both of those situations. Once on the ground, he's great at achieving mount or taking the back. He has a solid arm triangle rear naked choke series and also threatens constantly with the front headlock and leg attacks. Hard to hold down and willing to re-engage to stay on top. Defense is lacking and depends on his aggression to not be hit. He's vulnerable on the back foot and during exchanges and has been taken down in the past. He has been hurt repeated times, but he has great recovery and insane heart. The interesting thing about this fight is that both guys are weak to some of the strongest points of the other. Saint Denis has been caught mid-exchange by a lot of opponents, and Dustin is probably the best equipped of them all to punish him. The lack of head movement and his winging punches. On the other hand, Dustin's wall walk has exposed his back a number of times and has been submitted via rear naked choke twice in like somewhat recent memory, and that's exactly BSD's A game. Dustin will have the clear advantage in the close and stance matchup, not only because of his experience, but because I feel like his style is more transferable to fighting fellow southpaws, just because he has like a very solid jab, good low kicks, and better defense overall. Saint Denis starts very hot, and Dustin can be a bit of a slow starter, so the chances for an early finish are there, even on the feet, as the Frenchman packs big power and is likely to seal the deal against a hurt opponent with his submission game. This is maybe the fight that finally ends the days of Poirier as an elite talent, but I would have to see it first. I think it is rough. It is a rough one, but he gets it done. I'm picking Dustin Poirier via knockout on the third round. And with that, we're finally at the main event. Sean O'Malley versus Chito Vera, the rematch. Let's begin with the champion. O'Malley, a lanky striker with super fast hands, the 1-2 is his money shot, and he has a good versatility with it, simply by playing with the timing and his distance, especially adjusting with the jab before landing the right hand and throwing it completely straight or with a slight loop to catch opponents over the shoulder. O'Malley likes to move on the outside and play with timing and misdirections, but surprisingly, I feel like he makes some of his best work on the lead, despite his reputation as a counter-striker. He's very good at making reads and setting his opponent up. Big kicks and distance, stance switches a lot, and has a preference for the open stance matchup. A lot of fading and probing shots round up his striking game. Awareness and cagecraft have improved in the later years, but his striking is a lot less dangerous when he's pushed backwards, as he needs the initiative to be an effective counterpuncher and likes to have his feet set to deliver power. O'Malley is decently strong in the clinch. He likes to look for wrist control or collar ties to quickly pivot and disengage, something that we talk a little bit about with his teammate Kyler Phillips, also from MMA Lab. And his length allowed him to surprise foes with big and long punches during breaks. O'Malley is quick to sprawl or feed the single leg and leap leg in reaction to takedowns, but he can be surprised with shots during transitions. He possesses a good guard, using butterfly hooks to elevate or push the hips, frame on the shoulder and blade his hips to get up, or uses classic guard attacks like arm bars and triangles to generate space and turtle. He also likes to use the switch, and even when he's not successful with the submission attempts with the switches, he creates a little bit of a space, and he's good at wall walking, and he's also like very confident in his ability to stand up from the turtle position. The main weaknesses for O'Malley are his diminished effectiveness offensively being pressured, his defense inside the pocket I think can be lacking, and he relies a lot on his length too, and dealing with leg kicks and takedowns during transitions. Those are like the weaknesses for O'Malley. His opponent, Chito Vera Marlon. Just as I mentioned the last time that I talked about Chito in a full preview, he's a hard fighter to analyze, as he has used like very different styles throughout his career. Once an active kicker at range who would make his best work with a damaging and draining clinch assault. He later adopted an almost like purely counterpuncher approach that saw him win big fights and then end up on a losing streak. And then on his last fight against Munoz, Chito showed improved leading abilities using his good jab to dictate most of the fight and putting combinations together with good shot selection and rhythm play. And that opened more windows to his left hook that is like clearly his favorite punch nowadays. His potent kicking game and ability to switch stances seem to still be there, and he has actually have become a pretty decent boxer from both stances. And the clinch, there has been a few like glimpses of the clinch, and it seems like Chito is still nasty when he gets to the clinch. Chito's defense might give him like bad optics at times, because he like backs up, hiding behind his shoulder, framing, and high guard, and he tends to like get hit in the hard parts of his head. But he has like good eyes, and he's been like super hard to hurt. Chito is a slow starter. Despite starting like sharp, he doesn't get like the volume or the reads out of the gate. He takes a while to get going, so I feel like 25 minutes here help him. And especially because his eye for openings and opportunistic finishing instincts remain very high during long fights. I really don't know what to make out of this one. O'Malley has improved for sure since his last fight with Vera, which already had like strange circumstances with the injury, which I guess we will never know if it was caused by Chito or not. But the finish was very legit by Chito on the other hand. Chito has also gotten better skills-wise, but his approaches do not inspire a lot of confidence. He doesn't look as consistent. I went into this fight expecting to pick O'Malley to win an output-based decision, but I'm not sure anymore, man. A finish either way is always a possibility, as both guys have big power and are good at sealing the deal, but I think I gotta trust Chito to take the shots here just because he doesn't have the style that lends itself to get caught by something big by O'Malley. Like, the length of Chito, the ranges that he likes to operate in, I think makes it hard for O'Malley to like hurt him with a clean punch. O'Malley proved he could go hard for 3 rounds against Jan, but he still got tired, and it will be interesting to see if like Vera can snowball from any point in the fight. I feel like I'm not making the logical pick here. I think O'Malley via decision is the logical pick. I don't know, I think something about Chito's style, the frame and the attributes are like made to trouble O'Malley on the long run. I think Chito will have moments for sure, especially like if they get into the 3rd round, it can get very sketchy for O'Malley. Will that be enough to win? I'm not pretty sure, but I'm taking my chance and I'm picking Chito to win a decision. And that's the pay-per-view, guys. That's the pay-per-view. Very good. Very good, actually. Sorry I'm so late. I was busy, but this one is a great one. Hope you guys enjoyed this. When it comes to fight recommendations, Vergara versus Almabayev should be fun. Pereira versus Oleksiychuk is probably going to be fun as well. Munoz versus Phillips, it has potential, but it could be a bit awkward, to be honest. Gamrot versus Dos Anjos is a banger. And then the main card, to be honest, everything is good. Like, Jan versus Yadong is tremendous. Burns versus Jack Della, huge. Kevin Holland versus Michael Page is intriguing at the very least. It has potential to be boring, but I'm pretty excited to be like to see like Michael Page inside the octagon. I'm not gonna lie. Like I'm not never been a huge fan of his, but I like seeing like these like super out there different fighters fighting at this high level. And Kevin Holland is like a compelling matchup just because both guys are so long and so used to be the longer guy inside the cage. Poirier versus Saint-Denis, as a Poirier fan, this has the potential to be very sad, but if we just looking at it from a fight perspective, it's like zero chance that this is going to be boring. And I also don't think that O'Malley versus Chito is going to be boring. Like, things are going to heat up. O'Malley's very consistent with his output. Chito is going to be looking to hurt him. I do not think that this fight is going to disappoint, guys. That's the podcast. That's it. Remember, guys, if you want to support the fight site as an ongoing project, you can support us through Patreon. For only $5, you can get access to our Discord server and also like the whole library of exclusive content. I'll be posting the technical notes from the main card on Patreon next week and from the prelims free on Twitter for everyone to see. Thank you so much, guys. Hope you enjoyed the episode. We'll catch you on the next one. Bye.